and Peace, a podcast by the International Crisis Group.
Welcome back to War and Peace, a podcast of the International Crisis Group. I'm one of your hosts, Olga Oleker, speaking to you from Brussels.
And I'm Alyssa Jobson, your other host, also in Brussels. In fact, there's a very thin dividing wall between all you and I today.
In the next room. Today we are talking about what's happening in Moldova, its relations with its breakaway region of Transnistria and its Gagauz autonomous region, Moldova's paths to EU membership, and its concerns that Russia plans to destabilize the country.
Russia wants to destabilize my country. Russia wants to have a pro-Russian government in Moldova, and it has been using all kind of methods and has been waging a hybrid war against my country.
In late February of this year, Moldova's breakaway region of Transnistria, as well as its autonomous region, Gagauzia, made appeals to Moscow for help, citing mounting pressure from the pro-EU integration government in Chisinau. At the end of 2023, that government achieved a green light to begin accession talks with the EU. Now, Moldova and Transnistria have had an uneasy but largely peaceful relationship for the decades since the breakaway region declared independence, which it did following a short war with Moldova in the early 1990s. In that war, it was backed by Russia. Since Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine 2 years ago, the power dynamics between Chisinau and Tiraspol have shifted. Ukraine has closed its 400-kilometer-long border with the breakaway region, and that has left Transnistria entirely dependent on its trade links with the rest of Moldova. At the same time, Chisinau has ramped up pressure on Tiraspol, selectively denying entry to Transnistrian residents, and in January it imposed new taxes on goods from the region, which has further heightened Tiraspol's economic peril. Relations between the Moldovan government and the small autonomous region of Gagauzia, meanwhile, have also been strained, in large part because Gagauzia's governor, Yevgenia Gutsul, is allegedly linked to various Russian officials, and from the standpoint of Gagauzia, frustration with Chisinau's decision to suspend flights between it and Moscow. The appeals from Transnistria and Gagauzia to Moscow sound a bit like those that Moscow said it had received from Crimea just prior to its invasion of the peninsula. They have thus raised fears that Moscow might target Moldova to maintain its sphere of influence in former Soviet states with majority Russian-speaking populations. This said, militarily, there is absolutely nothing Russia can do as long as the neighboring parts of Ukraine remain in the hands of Ukraine's government. But Chisinau has long claimed that Russia seeks to destabilize the country, including by disrupting energy supplies, by funding political protests, and by trying to instigate a coup. In October of 2022, Russia cut gas supplies to Moldova by a third, which led to price hikes and wider inflation. Months of anti-government protests that Moldovan authorities blame on Moscow resulted in a crackdown on the pro-Kremlin Shore Party. Only a short time after the appeals from Transnistria and Gagauzia, on 17 March 2024, an empty helicopter at a military installation in Transnistria went up in flames. Transnistria blamed a Ukrainian drone strike, while Chisinau was quick to put the blame for the incident on Moscow, which it said was trying to inflame tensions and ramp up pressure on Moldova in the run-up to presidential elections and a planned referendum on EU membership later this year.
To talk about all of this, we're really pleased to welcome back to the show Oleg Ignatyov, Crisis Group's senior Russian analyst. And we're delighted to have on the show for the first time Marta Muchnik, who is Crisis Group's senior EU analyst. Both of them have followed the latest events in Moldova closely and have also done fieldwork in the region recently. Oleg, Marta, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So, Oleg, I'm going to start with you. What exactly are Transnistria and the Gagauz Autonomous Region asking Moscow for?
They're formally asking for help. I think we should talk, first of all, here about Transnistria, because Transnistria has a very different situation. And Transnistria is really under Moldova's pressure in terms of tariffs and taxes. Yes, economic pressure, first of all. And So I think it was more like a political gesture, a political move from Transnistria, and they wanted that everybody paid attention to what is happening in this breakaway region, It's also they want to make the situation, I would say, a little bit difficult for Moldova. Of course, they expected the reaction, such a reaction from Moldova. I mean, then Moldova is saying that Russia is going to do something in Transnistria, that Russia is going to destabilize the situation. And I think they believe that appealing to Russia, because Russia has a presence in Transnistria, yes, Russian troops are deployed in Transnistria. Formally, Russia like plays a role as a security guarantor of Transnistria. Yes, and they expect that Moldova would be a bit frightened. Yes, and it means that Moldova should think more about compromises in dialogue with Transnistria. So I would say that this is an attempt to protect itself. And they are in a difficult situation. They can't expect any help from anybody except Russia. Russia also can't help them, I mean directly, because Russia doesn't have access to Transnistria.
And what does Chisinau hope to accomplish by ramping up pressure on Transnistria in both the short term and the long term? And you've said that they've increased taxes and are really putting the pressure on.
They didn't increase, they imposed. So we should say a couple of words about what happened after Russia's invasion into Ukraine. Yes, Transnistria has a border with Moldova and Ukraine. Before the war, you had an opportunity to export either from Moldova or from Ukraine, through Ukraine. Yes, through Ukrainian ports. And it was a very important part of Transnistrian de facto independence because it had an access both to Ukraine and to Moldova. And it's an export-oriented economy, so it fully depends on its exports. But then the war started. Ukraine closed its part of the border with Ukraine, with Transnistria, sorry. And now if you are in Transnistria and if you have business there, you can export only through Moldova. And now Moldova has a full leverage over economic activity in Transnistria. So you don't have any opportunity except Moldova, so you have to negotiate with Moldova. And after that, when Ukraine closed its part of the border, Moldova started continually increasing pressure over Transnistria. So they tried to play more from a position of force. Because, of course, they saw in this situation like a new window of opportunity for reintegration of Transnistria. Because if Transnistria is fully dependent on Moldova, it means it will have to be more flexible in the dialogue with Moldova, yes? But they understood the situation as if they need to play only from the position of force. So, as I said, they started to limit different export imports from Transnistria. And after January the 1st, they imposed tariffs on Transnistria exports and imports. And this is a completely new situation because Transnistrian businesses, they operated under different rules since 1997. And it was, of course, it hit Transnistrian business and it caused outrage. But the goal, Moldova's goal is to force Transnistria that they understand that this situation is in favor of them and they want to use the time to force Transnistria to comply with the rules which function or operate in Moldova. So they hope that if they force them to play under the same rules, Transnistria would be closer to Moldova. Yes, to be closer in terms of regulations, to be closer in terms of business rules.
What does this mean for prospects for reunification? Yes, Transnistria will be closer in terms of rules and regulations to Moldova, but presumably this is causing some resentment in the breakaway region.
It's a very good question. And everybody asks this question, because what will happen? Yes, because if you want to make the other side closer, you should force it to cooperate. But will this strategy cause a cooperation between Moldova and Transnistria? For now, it's not. So it's a problem. But what Moldova is saying that they don't have a choice. Yes, they think that Moldova is also in a very difficult situation. They know exactly that Russia, when Russia invaded Ukraine, part of the plan was to take over Odessa and the south of Ukraine. And Odessa is just 50 kilometers from Tiraspol. Tiraspol is the capital of Transnistria. So they understand that the fate of Moldova and the fate of their dialogue with Transnistria is completely depend on what is happening in Ukraine and what will happen in Ukraine. And now they understand that everybody is waiting for the results of this war. Yes, and then everybody understands that the results of this war will influence the situation both in Moldova and Transnistria, and will influence both like conditions of the dialogue between Moldova and Transnistria. Yes, and they think that in the current situation, what they can do is to make try to make Transnistria a bit closer in terms of rules, first of all, business rules. But from the other point of view, yes, from the other side, they don't propose Transnistria anything. So they don't propose Transnistria a political dialogue. They don't propose Transnistria like a dialogue about reintegration, peace process, nothing like this is happening. Because they think that Moldova doesn't understand what will happen after the war. And Moldova thinks that Transnistria also doesn't understand what will happen after the war. And in this situation, both sides are not interested in such a comprehensive dialogue because they think that there is no conditions for that.
Okay, I want to turn to Martha and ask how the EU is looking at all of this and what its priorities are when it looks at the relationship between Moldova and Transnistria. How does it feel about Moldova putting pressure on Transnistria? Would it rather see something else, et cetera?
Yes, I think it's important to understand that from an EU perspective, there have been really deliberate efforts to dissociate the two issues, the issue of EU accession process negotiations and how Moldova is coping with rule of law reforms and advancing on this process, and the issue of the reintegration of Transnistria and the issue of conflict resolution. This is very clear from the rhetoric from both EU officials and Moldova officials as well. We've seen EU foreign policy chief Josep Borrell saying that Moldova could join as a divided country, which was read in Chisinau as sort of a way to disincentivize conflict resolution efforts. So it didn't encourage the process of conflict resolution and EU accession process. We see also EU officials have said that the EU accession process should not be held hostage to the dispute with Transnistria. There is, of course, great concern that Transnistria becomes a bargaining chip in the EU accession talks, giving leverage to veto power to Russia and pro-Russian forces to influence the process. And of course, no one in the EU and in Moldova is interested in giving any more leverage to potential spoilers at the time of geopolitical confrontation. However, I mean, it's important if we look a few years down the line, for example, if we take the example of 2030, which is only at this point an aspirational timeline, it's really hard to imagine Moldova joining the EU as a divided country with an unresolved territorial dispute. And we can only imagine what we would be like for the EU to accept multiple divided countries into its borders. It would make EU decision-making, EU functioning very difficult. So having said that, I think there is a growing recognition and understanding on behalf of both Moldovan officials as well as EU officials that there needs to be more efforts towards the conflict resolution and that this and while one should not condition the other, it's very important that we also take advantage of EU accession negotiations to really try to bring about sort of a resolution to this dispute. So I think I agree with Oleg that there have been several steps that really hurt Transnistria businesses, but also it's important to understand that from a perspective of Moldova, EU accession prospects. It's also part of a sort of a wider effort to bring Transnistria closer to the obligations that Chisinau has to fulfill in order to advance on its EU accession process. There can't be two tax regimes on two sides of the Dniester River. And that's something that you hear very often when you speak to Moldovan officials, that there can't be two tax and fiscal regimes on two sides, especially as if Transnistria wants to keep having access to the European single market and to the European market, especially in the context of its reorientation of its trade and its exports to the European market. We see that 78% of Transnistria exports now go to the European market. So I think this is quite important because it's very much part of Moldova's rhetoric when it tries to justify this series of steps that have been taken in the past year or so.
Does Transnistria want to join the EU, and how united, how unified is the Moldovan public on the prospect of EU membership?
Yes, that's a really good question. There are no polls on Transnistria and what Transnistrians want and desire. There are recent polls in Moldova, and it depends on the polls that you look at. I mean, when you speak to both Moldovan officials and also national think tank experts in Moldova, pro-European think tank experts, there's a general consensus that support for the EU stands at around 55%. And when you add the Moldova diaspora, this figure likely reaches around 65% of support to the EU. This is only in Moldova, of course. And I think a recent poll also spoke of support for the EU at around 63%. Of course, our sense is very much that Moldovan society is very polarized, that there's a split in half in terms of these aspirations. There's pro-European forces and people. A lot of the population is pro-European, but there's also big percentage of the population who is more prone to be influenced by Russia. They're Russian speakers. They consume Russian-speaking media, so they're more prone to be influenced by a different kind of narrative that is more anti-EU. So I would say the country is very much split in half. In Transnistria, there are no polls and also very little access to the European and the EU narrative. And we've seen this speaking to people on the ground, even people in Moldova that say it's very difficult to promote the certain kind of message in Transnistria. They have no access. I mean, they go there, but one of the ideas that were circulating was also to have more EU officials speaking in Russian-speaking media, TV stations and radio programs in Transnistria to really disseminate the message of what the EU is like, what would the benefits of joining the EU, the benefits to the citizens as well. And the government in Moldova is very concerned about Russian disinformation, Russian interference in the electoral process, illegal financing of anti-EU, anti-government demonstrations, and illegal financing of, you know, agitators that can conduct these protests across Moldova. And they're very mobilized, and not just the government, but also all these pro-EU think tanks and NGOs very mobilized in sort of launching in this campaign, explaining to the citizens what the EU is all about.
So let's come back to Russia. And what is Moldova worried about Russia doing? Assuming that, you know, for as long as the full-scale war in Ukraine has not shifted to favor one side or another and things kind of stay the way they are.
I think they have two main fears. The first fear, which was very common in 2022, that Russia could invade of Moldova and to occupy Moldova. Yes, the second fear is that Russian forces could be close to Moldovan-Ukrainian border, and Russia could force or could impose its rules on Moldova. And I mean that Russia could stop Moldova's accession policy toward the European Union. I think the interests of Russians haven't been changed since beginning of 2000s. Then Russia was in head of the peace process in Moldova. So they wanted to reintegrate Transnistria into Moldova. And they wanted that Moldova would be absolutely neutral country. It should be guaranteed. Moldova is now a neutral country. It's written in Moldova's constitution. So Moldova should be neutral. And Transnistria and Gagauzia should have like a veto power inside Moldova. So they promoted some kind of their asymmetric federation. Then Transnistria and Gagauzia, which are pro-Russian. Pro-Russian that they speak Russian in terms that they speak Russian. Yes, they consume Russian propaganda. They have like sentiments about Russia. And that these provinces or these regions could influence Moldova's future policy. And what they also wanted is that Russian troops, which are stationed in Transnistria, keep staying there. Yes, for example, one of the conditions of Russia's peace proposal was that the Russian troops should stay in Moldova till 2020. Yes, and I think their intentions about Moldova hasn't changed. So if we imagine the situation, then Russians are nearby Odessa, or if they control the south of Ukraine, yes, or if Ukraine has to accept any deal with Russia, and if Russia gets access to Moldova as part of this deal, I think they will return to this kind of peace proposals. Then they will say, okay, Russia is ready to help Moldova to integrate Transnistria and to unify the country. But in exchange for this, Moldova would have to be neutral. Russian troops will have to stay in Transnistria. And we could guarantee this neutrality somehow. I know that, for example, in the end of 2000s, Moldovans and Russians discussed like an idea of UN Security Council resolution which supports the neutrality of Moldova. So they would come up with ideas of some guarantees of this deal. But I think that's the main tension. I don't think that Russians want to occupy Moldova. They don't need it. I think they're thinking, they believe that Moldova should be part of the sphere of influence as Ukraine. Yes, and there should be some guarantees of this situation that Moldova is a part of Russia's sphere of influence.
Which is sort of an impossible thing.
For now, yes. It's not possible. Absolutely not possible.
I mean, Martha, what is the EU take on these Russian policy goals? I mean, does the EU see Moldova and Transnistria as a place where it is contested space between it and Russia, or is there something else going on?
No, I think absolutely. I mean, that's the accelerating the process of granting the candidate status to both Ukraine, Moldova, and Georgia, opening negotiations. All these steps were taken at a high speed if you compare to other countries aspiring to join the EU. And of course, this is all taken in the context of the larger Russia's aggression of Ukraine, the larger geopolitical confrontation. So there's very much sort of geopolitical competition also in Moldova, if you will. And you see, Maia Sandu has proposed a referendum for the country to join the EU, which will be held at the same time as the presidential election. And the reasoning behind it being not only to sort of secure a higher turnout in the referendum, but also to anchor the European course in Moldovan constitution and make it irreversible in case there's a change of power. And we know that there's presidential elections in October, and shortly after that, a couple of months after that, I think in 2025, we will see parliamentary elections. And there's a certain anxiety about what could happen then. And so the reasoning of Maia Sandu's government is very much sort of anchoring that in Moldovan constitution. So I think from a new perspective, of course, there is every interest to keep the course under, keep the country, sorry, under its orbit of influence, if you will. And that's also why they are very clear about dissociating the issue of Transnistria, because they don't want this to be a bargaining chip in the EU accession process.
So what can Moldova and Transnistria do to reduce tensions and avoid a confrontation in the future?
I think the only option is a direct dialogue between Moldova and Transnistria. And now the situation is unique because Moldova can have a direct dialogue with Transnistria without the participation of Russia, Ukraine, anybody else. So it has a real opportunity to talk Transnistria directly and to discuss every problem they have or they could have. And the second thing is that, for my opinion, but it's my opinion, that Moldova should not play only with the position of force. It should propose something to Transnistria, and it should discuss any problems that could happen between them in the future. So it should not just say, okay, we impose tariffs and taxes, and that's what they are doing. And you should accept this. I think they should discuss, if they're thinking about such decisions, they should discuss them in advance between Moldova and Transnistria. And this moment is very unique because the war in Ukraine is continuing, and the war in Ukraine could really change the situation between Moldova and Transnistria. Yes, and I think that they should not lose this opportunity of a direct dialogue.
Martha, do we see any progress in this direction?
Yes, I think we have seen some progress. So we see that there is some, I think, at least it starts emerging in the rhetoric of Moldovan officials, a certain emphasis on devising a plan for the reintegration of Transnistria, devising a plan that sees Transnistria's future in the EU. There is references to the conflict settlement as well, and the importance that this also plays within the context of EU accession negotiations. You also see a growing understanding on the part of EU officials. I think it's very important while I understand the impetus to sort of dissociate the two processes, we also should understand that during accession negotiations is where when the EU has the biggest carrot and the biggest leverage to play on sort of bringing about a resolution of the conflict. So even if we understand that one shouldn't condition the other, but there should be a deliberate effort to try to bring the two parties together in the context also of EU accession negotiations. In terms of dialogue, I think it's also encouraging to see that there is attempts to and the thinking to create a special format, a special task force to beyond the 1+1 format that will bring together sectorial experts from Transnistria and from Tiraspol, from Chisinau, to discuss how that this is the inevitable trajectory of Moldova within the EU and how this affects Transnistria, Transnistrian businesses, discussions on rules and standards, environmental rules and standards as well, customs, businesses, and how it affects and how to sort of bring the two sides of the Dniester River closer and more aligned.
Thank you so much. I think that's where we're going to leave it on that somewhat positive note. Oleg and Martha, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more from Oleg and Martha, you can follow them on Twitter. They are at Oleg Ignatiev18 and at M. Muchnik, respectively. We also encourage you to read their upcoming Q&A on Moldova and Transnistria, which they have co-written with our Deputy Europe and Central Asia Programme Director, Alyssa de Carbonell.
You can find more of our work on Moldova, Russia, and Ukraine on our website, crisisgroup.org. You can also follow Crisis Group and us on social media. Crisis Group is at Crisis Group on Twitter. Alyssa is also there as at Alyssa Jobson. And I'm on Blue Sky as at Olya Ulaker.
We'd like to thank our producer, Alex Vigursky, and our coordinator, Heiko Schaub. But our biggest thanks, as always, goes out to you, our listeners. If you have any thoughts or suggestions, do email us at podcasts@crisisgroup.org. You can also leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. And to ensure that you don't miss an episode, don't forget to subscribe to War and Peace if you haven't done so already. You can find us on all the main podcast platforms.
We will be back with a regular episode next month. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.